You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
What is it called?
Dream Drop Distance?
Is that what it's called? I thought it was called Deep Sleep or something.
No, that's a 3DS game. Dream Drop Distance. Whatever. Get it? Because it's 3D.
I thought there was a sleep in it.
Yeah, it's weird.
I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, also, we're doing a Kingdom Hearts episode come March when that entire pack comes out.
I really hope not.
I'll personally buy it, and I'll give it to you, too.
Your Kingdom Hearts just infected my Final Fantasy, and it's never been the same.
But by the second game, it's just a Kingdom Hearts game, though. Cloud's in it, yeah, but...
I don't like Cloud.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cloud's okay. Can we just... Let's just have this be the intro. Are we just going for it? Let's just go for it right now. Welcome, everyone, to We Are Error, episode 20. We're 20 episodes in, John.
Y'all know what that means.
Music.
I'm doing a little maracas.
Okay.
My girlfriend does that when she gets really heavy.
She does invisible maracas?
She does invisible maracas. She kind of sticks her tongue out, too.
Oh,
and I'm just
okay.
Like, you got to stop.
She's a keeper, then, John.
Yes,
obviously definitely. Is. But, yes, I am Chris Herman. I'm joined by John Romo, and we're here to talk about all kinds of video game news and nonsense. Let's just get right into the biggest stories right now. And so it seems like a free weekend are fast becoming the new demo disc. Just within the past month, we had a free weekends for Titanfall 2 and The Elder Scrolls Online. Now Activision is joining the trend with a free weekend for Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on December 15th through 1 p.m. December 20th, you can download and play all three of Infinite Warfare's modes, campaign, multiplayer, and zombies. There are limitations, of course. You'll only be able to play through the first two missions in the single-player campaign, while multiplayer and zombie mode have level caps in place, 15 for standard multiplayer, 3 for zombies. There's no restrictions on who you can play with, though. So if you've got a buddy who already owns the game, you should be free to team up and take on Space Marines and or the Undead together. If you decide to purchase Infinite Warfare after the free weekend is over, your progress will carry over. So no worries about losing all of the unlocks you earn over the 5-day period. Now, this is interesting because it goes into like this other story that we have, and that's specifically talking about the sales for Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. The Call of Duty franchise has seen its sales figures slowly decline over the last several years, and in a year filled with excellent multiplayer shooters, it appears that the latest installment, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, has sold especially poorly. NPD figures for the month of November suggested that sales for Call of Duty Infinite Warfare were down by almost 50% compared to the sales of 2015's entering the series, Black Ops 3. Doug Kruetz, an analyst for the Cohen Research Group, told clients that sales of the blockbuster shooter were about 17% lower than the group's previous expectations. Activision Blizzard shares have dropped by roughly 20% since October, even as Blizzard's Overwatch continues to thrive, reaching 20 million players in just 5 months. It doesn't mean that 20 million copies of the game were sold. It just means that 20 million people are playing the game. Black Ops 3 saw a much healthier launch last year of $550 million in initial sales after both Call of Duty Ghosts and Call of Duty Advanced Warfare had underperformed. The game was also available on the last-gen Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. However, although those versions of the game featured a heavily downgraded multiplayer mode and didn't feature a campaign at all. Jeez, I remember that. At the time, Activision CEO Eric Hirschberg said the player engagement for Black Ops 3 was the highest in Call of Duty history. Infinite Warfare released in November at the industry standard $60 price point, but an $80 legacy version of the game was also bundled in a remastered Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. While reception to the newer game, and particularly its multiplayer mode, has been decidedly lukewarm, Modern Warfare Remastered was met with a much more positive response. It seems almost inevitable that Activision will continue to go down this route with future Call of Duty games, likely with a remastered version of Modern Warfare 2 or the original Black Ops. Call of Duty Infinite Warfare is, of course, available on the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PC. So there's a lot to take in there. I think, first of all, the fact that they're offering like a free, you know, several free days where you're able to gain access to Infinite Warfare for this, you know, a good extended period of time with all these multiple modes. I don't think they've ever done this before.
They've done free weekends for multiplayer specifically, yeah. And they've done betas.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And usually these free weekends come, like, long after the fact, or even more around, I don't know, a later holiday or something,
yeah.
Just so people, or just they'll let you play multiplayer for free, you just have to have the disc. Mm-hmm. Something. Mm-hmm. Not, we're giving you the full game, like, a good chunk of the full game. I mean, you know, yeah. Not the full game, yeah. But yeah. All modes. That's something new.
Access to all modes.
Yeah, that's something new, mm-hmm. And I read that before I saw the soft sales story.
Yeah.
I read that, and I was like, oh, shit. They're, like, scared.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to convince people, especially right before Christmas, they want you to play, because this is the day after we're recording.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to get your hands on it so you can make that decision and tell your parents, I want this for Christmas. Can you buy it for me?
Yep.
Blah, blah, blah. They're worried, and like you noted in the story, this has been a good year for shooters.
Yeah, it's been an excellent year.
Battlefield 1... slower than Call of Duty, but it's excellent for large scale. Overwatch will feed that fast itch, and it's also just got a lot more going on.
Mm.
And I think, I haven't played it, but I've actually heard good things about Titanfall 2.
Yep. Oh, he's finally said it! He's finally said everybody! And then, of course, the other game was Doom.
If you really want to just sing, let's not talk about the multiplayer.
Multiplayer's fine, but go ahead.
But if you just want to shoot things on your own and have fun, Doom, up there, top five of the year for me. Like, I want to go back. Mm-hmm. And I never want to do that.
You gotta get those achievements.
And I haven't... if it wasn't Call of Duty, I wouldn't really know that it was out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... I haven't heard anyone talk about it. Except for... oh, man, I really want to play Call of Duty 4 again. I really wish it wasn't tied to Infinite Warfare. Although, that could just be me.
I don't think it's just you. I think a lot of people would just prefer to get that remastered version. From what I've seen from the remastered, it's a pretty good upgrade from what I've seen. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised in the next month or so they quietly release it digitally on all those platforms.
I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I kind of hope these sales keep going down. Sorry, Activision, but I really just want to buy Modern Warfare Remastered. And I will. $20, like, I'll drop that right now.
I don't think I'll ever say this again, but I think Activision should take note from EA and do what they're doing with the Battlefield franchise, where apparently they are going to be taking some time off of that. At least maybe like a year, like every year they'll have like a Battlefield, and the next year they'll focus on Battlefront. And so then there's not like this, first of all, you don't have this continuous glut of like military first-person shooters. It gives him the whoever studio is working on it more time, and they can craft something like special, which, you know, is why I think Battlefield 1 stands out as one of the best first person shooters of the year because of just everything about its aesthetic, the quality, and the multiplayer. So,
And the thing is, and you set it off really quickly, whatever studio is working on it, Activision did something like that. Well, we'll take a year off,
sure,
but instead of we're going to take a year off, it's we'll just have the same game come out, or you know, the same franchise come out. But a different studio.
Exactly.
And the thing about that is, the hardcore fans, they know what studio to look out for. Mm-hmm. Treyarch. Yeah, Treyarch now, because they made Black Ops 3.
I thought it was Sledgehammer that was the popular one. I don't fucking
remember. Sledgehammer is old Bulletstorm guys, if I'm remembering correctly.
Those people that who can fly.
Oh, never mind. I get them confused.
It could be for all I know.
But Sledgehammer is the one who did... Advanced Warfare.
Right, that's it.
This one is Infinity War. Modern Warfare 4 Call of Duty 4 people.
Those, some of those people.
The people who left to form Respawn and Titanfall.
Right. Black Ops is Treyarch.
Black Ops is Treyarch. So the hardcore fans know that, and I think that's why Black Ops 3 saw healthier sales.
Right.
Infinity Ward.
Yeah.
Shit!
There's
Activision.
A lot. Yeah.
Fuck!
Yeah.
Infinity Ward's last game was Ghosts. People hated
hated
Ghosts.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the hardcore fans are aware of this.
Mm.
The casual fan, when they taste a bad Call of Duty, they don't know who made it. Mm. I don't think they just know Call of Duty Activision. That's all they know.
Right.
And so you get a Ghosts and you're just slowly, I don't really want to play Call of Duty. Mm. You get an Infinite Warfare, I don't really want to play Call of Duty. You don't care. You don't take note of who made it. And I think that's hurting them.
Yeah.
Hurting Call of Duty, especially when they're just, I think people are tired of jumping around and just like having these complex ground games. I think there's something to be said, and I follow some esports people like Nate Shaw and like Octic, all the FaZe. Okay. My brother's really into it as well. But a lot of them have been calling for boots to the ground Call of Duty. Mm. They want it to be simpler because it just, one, in esports, it's just a completely different game with people jumping over you all the time. But at times, it's just way too chaotic.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I love Battlefield 1, because it's just slower and it's simpler and, like, I can think yeah. on what I'm doing.
Firing a bolt action rifle, yeah.
And I think you're right. It's just time for Call of Duty or Activision in general to maybe come up with a different franchise.
Yeah.
To, like, ease the strain off of Call of Duty. It can be the exact same game. I just think stepping away from the name, maybe just having another franchise that is old school, like Call of Duty.
Yeah.
And have that counterbalance with you get a futuristic one year and you get an old school World mm-hmm. War II one the other year.
Yeah.
And it's like, it provides a different element. And that's kind of what EA is doing. They mm-hmm. Battlefield 1 and then Battlefront, which is obviously going to be sci-fi. And I think in the long run, that's just going to help with customer fatigue.
Yeah.
So
yeah, completely agreed.
I just had a lot of thoughts about right?
That's why you're here, John. You're here to get all those thoughts out. But we have some more news. An Ubisoft representative has reportedly confirmed to a user on NeoGAF that the single-player portion of For Honor will require an online connection to play. NeoGAF user GameZone has shared an image of a private message he received on the game's forums regarding rumors over For Honor's single-player campaign. "We can confirm that For Honor is an always online experience," replied Ubi Jurassic, who is listed as a community representative. "Some elements of progression, which is hosted online, are shared across story and multiplayer modes. Players will need to be connected to the internet at all times to play For Honor." GameSpot also claims to have received confirmation that the information is true. For Honor is an upcoming historical combat game where warriors from various eras do battle against one another. There's actually an update to the story today. Ubisoft has confirmed to IGN that For Honor will require internet connectivity for all modes at all times, stating players will need to be connected to the internet at all times to play For Honor. "Some elements of progression, which are hosted online, are shared across story and multiplayer modes." So, of course, like the hearing this, the reaction was overwhelmingly negative.
Yeah, this is dumb.
You know, it's the problem is that, and I'll be devil's advocate in this situation. I play most of my games online at this point, even if it's a single player game. Like, I'm always online, whether it be on my PS4 or on my Xbox One. And at this point, it's like, if I get this game, which I really don't want to, because what I'm seeing is like this, I don't know. I'm not really into samurai and knights
hack and slash, right?
Vikings. Yeah, I don't like that type of gameplay, so it might not be for me.
It reminds me of like a PS2 era game, which is weird.
Yeah,
which
I can
is probably
see
why
that.
You don't like it.
Probably why.
You know, like Mark McCree or something like that.
Yeah, I can kind of see it that way. But I mean, for me personally, it just, I don't even think this honestly bothers me at this point, because I just play online with everything. I mean, even if my console's offline, I found that I really don't even play my games. I just read a book or something. I go to that old, you know,
damn,
book reading stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Book?
I really don't. Yeah, it's crazy.
What book you been reading?
Man in the High Castle.
It's now a book show, people.
Yeah, well,
that's
it's
a TV
show.
That's a TV
but
show.
But originally it was a book written by Philip K. Dick.
I do like Ubik.
Hmm?
That Philip K. Dick novel?
Ubik? No.
Ubik? The one with the spray can and like things are...
I don't think I read that one.
Oh. Philip K. Dick, people. Writes books.
Yes. But okay, so you obviously taken a more negative...
Well, okay, so I have mixed feelings about this.
Yeah.
When I thought about it initially with the Xbox One, because the Xbox One had this thing where it's, you're going to always need to be online.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, I remember being very negative about it.
Yeah.
But later on thinking, while they are starting to roll back, I thought, well, now you're just not different.
Mm-hmm.
And now you and the PS4 are going to be more of the same. And that's kind of my complaint now, is they're the same console.
Yeah.
And the PS4's UI is just better than the Xbox One's. And so I just prefer the PS4 now.
Mm-hmm.
But had the Xbox One been this completely different thing where it did have to be always online and whatever they committed to their dream.
Yeah.
Like, fail or not. You know, say what you want about Nintendo. They fucking commit to their stupid-ass ideas.
Yeah, they do.
And, like, everyone else will fall off around them, but they fucking go for it.
Yep.
And, like, we had that episode about the Wii. We didn't really have anything great to say about it.
Yeah, it was a piece of shit.
But
yeah.
I think I'm always going to remember it.
Oh, yeah.
For, like, for better or worse, I'm always going to be like, remember the Wii?
Mm-hmm.
That was fucking crazy, huh?
Yeah.
I'm never going to say that about the One. I'm just going to be like,
sure,
remember that?
Yeah.
I like the other one.
Yeah. Yep.
It was black
mm-hmm.
and big.
It was black. Yeah. Big and black. I knew you liked
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So.
Good job.
Yeah.
But when it comes to this game, it just, again, it's I might change my mind later, but my immediate reaction is you're making it harder for people. You're eliminating some people. There are some people who just can't always be connected online, whether like they have poor internet connections.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking of, I don't know, people who are just lucky to have a console in general and who sometimes just can't afford to play Xbox Live or something.
Yeah.
Then they just can't play this game. And that's just weird to me. And it seems a little user hostile. I get it for certain modes, but all modes?
Yeah. Like single player. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. And it's just, it doesn't seem like a smart business decision, which I don't, you know, in recent months and years, I don't really think Ubisoft has been making great business decisions. I don't know of a Ubisoft, other than Watch Dogs 2, I haven't really thought of like a good Ubisoft game that's been getting a lot of press lately.
Yeah, most recently, I will say Far Cry Primal, fun game. But speaking of smart business decisions, Overwatch's latest seasonal event, the holiday-themed Winter Wonderland, has rolled out to players and will end on January 2nd, 2017. All earned or purchased loot boxes during the event have been replaced with winter loot boxes, housing over 100 appropriately themed cosmetic items, including icons, sprays, victory poses, emotes, highlight intros, and skins like the Torbjorn, Santa's skin, you'd think I could say that, and Winston, amazingly imagined as a Yeti. Additionally, the Winter Wonderland event is adding a new brawl, My Snowball Offensive. The brawl is a 6-versus-6 single elimination mode where everyone plays a modified version of My.
Fuck her.
Her weapon no longer sprays frost or fires icicles, but instead shoots one-hit kill snowballs and must be reloaded by finding piles of snow around the map. In this brawl, Mai's ultimate has similarly changed, turning her blaster into a semi-automatic, continuously firing version when activated. Lastly, two maps have received the Frosty treatment. Hanamura and King's Row will look a little different in an effort to help spread the holiday cheer. I mean, yeah, Mai sucks as a character. I'm not a big fan.
She's a piece of shit.
Yeah. I hate that ice ball that she creates. And just like it, she's on the same team.
She sucks.
Yeah.
She sucks.
Well, she's the support character, basically.
She sucks.
Yeah, all right. She's
just a stupid, I'm going to be in an ice cocoon. I have 1% health, but now I have 100. Fuck you. Like, I hate her so much.
Yeah, well, now she has an entire theme about her, basically. But here's the thing. I think, the Blizzard does a fantastic job with these holiday-themed expansions that they've added to the game. I mean, the last one, which is Halloween, with Junkerstein's Halloween Castle, whatever the hell it was. It was really, really fun, and I loved all the different skins. Like, they have Reaper, like, as a pumpkin head, and Roadhog, as Frankenstein's monster. It's all great. And the same thing with here, where we kind of get, Torbjorn as Santa, and, Winston as a Yeti. I mean, I've seen these skins, and they look fantastic, and sadly, I probably won't be able to play for most of this event because I'll be gone. But from what I've seen, I think, wow, this is great. And it gives just players incentive to keep playing this game. And Blizzard is fantastic about that.
And I think it's expertly timed because my PS4 crew, like my old high school friends, we've been playing Battlefield 1. And so Overwatch has just been kind of sitting on the shelf, which, you know, isn't the game's fault. It's just you moved on to the next game.
Yeah.
And I think this could give us a reason to jump on for a couple weeks, to keep it. I keep box copies, so to keep me from taking it to GameStop and going, well, I'm done with this game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just give me more money so I can buy Final Fantasy or whatever. I really want to play Final Fantasy.
Yeah. I'll play it, but I don't want to.
So, like, it just gives me an excuse to remember, oh, I enjoy this game.
Yeah.
Because, and we're going to get into this in a later episode when we, go down our list of top 10 games of the year. I recognize that Overwatch is great. And I love the fuck out of Overwatch when I'm playing with my friends. Yeah. But I've tried to play just me with randoms. It is not fun for me. And I don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, like, my only time of really enjoying this game is if I can convince all my friends to go get on with me. Mm-hmm. And something like this is something we talk about. Like, oh, well, like, let's go play this. And, fuck my and everything. But the one-hit kill snowball stick, that sounds fun. I love one-hit kill modes because they're kind of fast and kinetic. I love, like, SWAT and Halo.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up. I love SWAT and Halo. It's one of my favorite multiplayer.
Like, games. In Reach, Halo Reach,
so good.
All they did was play Team SWAT. Yeah, I didn't touch anything
else. Headshots, man.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, that mode sounds super hella fun to me, and I kind of want to jump into that because that sounds less tactical and sounds more single-player, like, one-person focused to me. So,
but you have to play as Mai the entire time.
Fuck her.
So, now, Overwatch wasn't the only game that's getting a nice holiday-themed expansion. Hitman just got a Christmas-themed mission, and the two targets are the numbskull burglars from Home Alone.
Aye.
Developer IO Interactive sent word last week that the mission was on the way, but no one learned the targets' names until today. Here's part of the briefing from Agent 47's handler, Diana Burnwood. Happy holidays, 47. Your destination is Paris, France, and I must confess, this one is a bit of an odd one. Your targets are Harry Smokey Bagnato and Marv Slick Gonif, a pair of professional thieves currently breaking into the Palais de Waleska. Bagnato and Gonif are both American nationals now living in Paris after a series of botched break-ins and related violent crimes forced them to leave their home country. Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern starred as burglars Harry Lime and Marv Merchants, respectively, in Home Alone and Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, which also happened to co-star our future president. Just want to put that out there. In both films, they were outwitted by a child named Kevin McAllister, Macaulay Culkin, and the kit bash traps he laid for them. This isn't the first goof on Hollywood that Hitman has done. This summer, Gary Busey and Gary Cole starred in an ironic, elusive target mission where Busey, by vote of fans, was selected for the hit.
Now, I wonder how that makes Busey feel.
Oh, he totally did it. He did the voice work for the film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did his own dialogue. My favorite bit was like, you can't catch me. I have a cloak of invisibility. It's kind of sad, though, because he's actually like mentally ill in real life. And it's just like, all right, I'm just going to keep exploiting him, I guess.
It's funny, right?
I have to admit, like, even though I haven't played the game, but I wasn't a fan of the idea of Hitman being like kind of like an episodic type title. But for whatever reason, they're putting out like a lot of content for this.
I've heard really good things about it too.
Yeah.
And just something we're throwing out there, the complete season gets released at the end of January, so like
might be worth picking up.
Yeah, it might be worth trying. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's gonna be pretty cheap. So
yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I enjoy the gameplay of Hitman in small doses. So, you know, maybe the season structure really works for them.
Yep.
But I must ask. Mm. Home Alone or Home Alone 2?
Home Alone.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Home Alone 2, like It's like the same fucking movie, guys.
It's just a different location.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's like, how are his parents so stupid?
Oh, yeah.
How are they so bad? And how does he just not know to just, like, not do what he does?
Mm-hmm.
And also, why are the same bandits there? Why are they there?
They're not very smart.
And
the water bandits,
the
right?
The wet bandits.
Wet bandits, thank you.
And I think they have a new shtick in the second
they
one.
They do, I forget what it is. It's like
sticky.
Is it sticky? I think it is sticky. There's some cool sticky stuff.
Cool. Yeah. I could write Home Alone.
That
pigeon lady is just the same sort of concept as the old man in the first one.
Lonely old man.
And like in the second one, they seem to really want to murder him, and that makes me uncomfortable.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that movie's dumb.
Yeah. Well, we both know
Christmas Story is better anyway.
No, Christmas Story is better, but of course we know which one Donald Trump prefers. So. Yes. So moving on from that, get off Donald Trump and the Christmas theme
cool,
stuff.
Cool thing.
Yes.
Cool thing.
Yes. Turtle Rock Studios, developer of cooperative first-person shooters such as Left 4 Dead and Evolve, is working on a new AAA IP, reports GameIndustry.biz. It will be published by Perfect World Entertainment, known for free-to-play titles like Star Trek Online, which I've played and I like. Fuck anyone else who says that game sucks, because it doesn't. We are developing a new franchise set in an all-new universe that leverages the style of gameplay our community loves and expects from Turtle Rock Studios, Phil Robb, co-founder of Turtle Rock, told GameIndustry.biz. We're focusing on what we do best, heart-pounding moment-to-moment online co-op FPS action. The studio did not give details on the game, except to say that it currently has a strong dark fantasy element to it. With Perfect World as our partner, we'll always make sure that our players come first by listening to them and growing the game based on how they play and interact over what we hope are many years to come, Rob added. The studio's president, Steve Goldstein, stopped short of calling the game a spiritual successor to what they've done previously. We think that kind of label has big expectations tied to it, Goldstein told GameIndustry.biz. It sets an expectation that we're making something sequel-like that does not deviate too far from the original formula. And while we focus on awesome first-person shooting and co-op, we'd rather have the new game be something our players classify and designate and judge without us affixing the label ourselves. Turtle Rock announced in late October that it was ending development on its most recent game, Evolve. The company noted that the decision had been made by publisher 2K Games, not the studio. Evolve debuted in February of 2015, and just this summer made the move to a free-to-play model. It reviewed well at Polygon, but originally I think it was kind of reviewed pretty mediocrely on a number of other sites as well. Even I remember when the game was actually first released, like gaming press were all raving about it, like right before this, because they had all played it. But then
it was like the opposite of the Wolfenstein situation, right? Like
yeah, pretty much. Situation. Yeah, everyone was saying it was winning all these kind of the game of the show award type things, and it's like, and then it turned out like, oh, there's not much there. But anyway, I mean, reading this, do you kind of want Turtle Rock to pursue another co-op kind of multiplayer game?
This is what they're good at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to argue, like, not to do something different.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the way Evolve didn't work, it kind of seems like maybe you need to.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't do something different, it's going to... The title of spiritual successor is just going to be on their thing.
Yeah.
This is just going to, they're going to be pigeonholed as, well, this is what Turtle Rock does.
Yeah.
And like, on one hand, can be a good thing. Like, if you nail it every time, but maybe people just don't want that right now.
Yeah. I mean, for me, this thing is just, there's such a, so many first person shooters now, especially this year. It's like, well, I mean, are people going to find time to play another, you know, co-op first person shooter, especially when you have a lot of great games in the market already? I prefer to see them do something completely different. Kind of like what Guerrilla Games did with, they had made the Killzone franchise for years for Sony, and now they're making Horizon Zero Dawn, which is an open world
super interesting
game. It's just like, wow, this is very different. I would prefer if they took that type of direction, but I mean, who knows? It could be fun.
I'm glad to see they're not dead.
No,
continuing on and like getting an opportunity to do something else. I'm super glad that that's happening.
Yeah,
because I think they did try creative things, and again, it's just it didn't work. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now go push that creativity in a different area of the industry.
Yeah,
and like try something new.
Yeah.
So like, just keep doing your thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. But we have another story which I'm actually pretty excited about, which is the Yooka-Laylee release date, and this is from the Yooka-Laylee website. This was a post, yeah, that you can actually find and read on the website yourselves. Today we can finally confirm that Yooka-Laylee will launch on April 11, 2017 for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, PC, Mac, and Linux. With pre-orders now available at fake money, $39.99 American US dollars and other fake money option. For non-Kickstarter backers in both digital and physical formats from all participating stores worldwide. As an extra bonus, everyone who pre-orders Yooka-Laylee on PC, Xbox One, or PS4 will receive an instant unlock of the Yooka-Laylee Toy Box, which offers a taste of the platforming mechanics set to appear in the full game in a self-contained, spoiler-free sandbox. We're also currently looking into ways we can make the console toy box available to appropriate backers. On Steam and GOG.com, you'll find special digital deluxe versions of Yooka-Laylee, which include a digital soundtrack and manual art book. Kickstarter backers will soon be able to upgrade their pledge to a physical version, but we need a little bit longer to finalize the method. Our priority is to make sure that physical backers receive their game as soon as possible and not weeks late, so we want to make sure we choose the right distribution method before taking your pledges. Now, they also made another post on the same day, and this is in regards to the Yooka-Laylee, a version of the game that's coming out on the Wii U. And they said, after many challenging months, we're finally able to update you on the Wii U version of Yooka-Laylee and announce a number of developments. The Playtonic team is sad to confirm that despite our best efforts in exploring every possible avenue, we've encountered unforeseen technical issue that unfortunately means it will be impossible for us to release the game on Wii U as initially planned. We can, however, confirm exciting news that we are now working very closely with Nintendo to look to bring Yooka-Laylee to the upcoming Nintendo Switch. We're looking forward to exploring the opportunity, and we'll have more details to share early next year. We'd like to apologize to those affected by this development and offer all Wii U backers, I guess that was the two of them, the opportunity to move their pledge free of charge to any of the versions launching on April 11th, PS4, Xbox One, PC, Mac, or Linux. Sad person who has Linux. Or upgrade to the Nintendo Switch version when we announced further details in 2017. Information on how backers can change their formats will arrive in January once we finalize the smoothest possible solution. For more details on our platform, we've prepared a Yooka-Laylee Wii U fact page, which all you sad Wii U players can read. So, okay, first of all, I'm really excited for Yooka-Laylee. It's, it's totally, you know, it's a lot of the original people from Rare who have made this game. The fact that it's coming out so soon in spring, can't wait. And the other thing I'm not surprised by, yeah, of course the Wii U version's canceled. You know, because they're not going to sell any copies on that goddamn thing. And I bet, I do believe them that it's a combination thing. One, they know that they're not going to sell any copies on it, and two, they probably were forced by Nintendo, like, you have to incorporate some kind of garbage on our on the Wii U touchpad, and I'm thinking, we don't want to do this. And I absolutely believe in that they had technical problems in regards to that. Yeah. So I'm fine with that. Maybe it'll come to Switch. I have doubts about that, especially we don't even know how the Switch is going to perform. We have no idea if it's going to have all its various gimmicks.
Yeah, but Fallon was so excited about it. You see him? He's so cute and excited.
Yes.
He acts like a little kid when he sees a new thing.
Oh, okay.
It's adorable.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, hearing this, I mean, Warren, are you excited for Yooka-Laylee? Are you even surprised that the Wii U version is
I've good? Seen very little of Yooka-Laylee.
Oh, okay.
Because I saw it and was like, so this is Banjo-Kazooie?
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And I thought, I'll probably play it. I'm not going to, like, wait for it. But when it comes out, I'll play it. And it's $40. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it also brings something else up. And I guess I was wondering this because we've also always had a discussion about digital and physical. Mm-hmm. Why is digital the same price as physical? You're paying for a box.
You know what it is? One, I think if you this is why I typically buy digital, because I know all the money is going to that developer and the publisher, and not where if I buy it retail, part of that money is going to the person who sells the game. That's why I don't want to buy from GameStop anymore, and that's why I'm fine with like that they have that set price for each game, but I just prefer to pay the full price for digital than go to a store. I mean, that's my kind of way of thinking. I know it doesn't really answer the question that you asked me, but that's just how I think of it in my head. It's okay. Like all the money is going towards the person who I want it to go towards. But and so I don't have a problem paying full price that way.
Okay. I guess that makes sense. I like the boxes, though.
Yeah, no, I like
it. And if I get to pay $2 extra for a box.
Yeah, there you go.
And I get to resell it. I can't sell digital. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was just wondering about that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this. It looks like a fun... There's April's a dry month. I always feel like nothing really
smart.
Really comes out there. We'll probably be playing Mass Effect at the time, really.
Yeah.
But this will be a fun little diversion from it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I love cartoon characters in games.
Yeah.
Like I've said multiple times, PS2 era, companion games were some of my favorites.
Yeah,
sadly, I haven't gotten to play Banjo-Kazooie outside of Nuts and Bolts, which is fine.
It's fine.
And I hope Rare, or I guess it's not Rare, but... The Playtonic. People from where they understand that, like, maybe not everyone wants to play a collectathon.
That's the thing that I'm worried about. That's my biggest criticism of Banjo-Kazooie is that you have to collect so many fucking things. Notes, feathers, those little
puzzle pieces.
Goomba
jiggies. Creatures.
Yeah, jiggies. That's right. Yeah, it's just like enough already. So hopefully there's not too much of that in here, where it's more just like platforming and solving puzzles and, encountering goofy characters and things like that.
So. Most of all, I am happy for these people.
Yeah.
The people that get to make this game. And the people of Rare have been through some shit.
They got fucked over by Microsoft.
Yeah, absolutely. Had to make avatars and all that bull. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm glad some got to, leave and do their own thing and now get to return to what made them famous. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, it performs well and it's a good game and they can continue.
So. No, I completely agree. Now, we have to end on, a family-friendly story. Of course, Final Fantasy 15.
I can't believe you added this one.
Everyone's very excited. So, of course, the fact that it's a cultural phenomenon, at least among a certain group of people, but you knew the porn industry had to get involved with this.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a porn that has been released of Final Fantasy 15. It focuses on Cid's granddaughter, Cindy. Now, it's important to point out that although that it clearly is Cindy in the porn, they have to change the character's name. So, this is a summary I've obtained from the website in question.
Thank you.
The summary states, Sean Lawless's car has broken down and goes to see a mechanic in the middle of the desert. Nikki Benz comes out and inspects Mr. Lawless's car. Miss Benz says how she'd hate to charge him for the damage, but that she has to keep her business afloat. Sean figures Nikki's teasing him with her huge tits, so he's willing to pay any price she throws at him. But when a monstrous troll appears, Nikki fights off the creature. Busty Nikki Ben soon realizes that she still has another monster to tame, Sean's big cock.
Damn it.
That is. So.
One that's a bad summary.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a bad summary. It's pretty bad. I mean, it starts out like,
I can't believe it's okay until
you get to the tits. And it's like, that's weird. But, I mean, it just shows you that.
There's no flow.
It's, you know, it's really not. Not really well structured at all, really. But, I mean, that just shows that the video game industry is definitely very popular. Video games are popular that now there's porns made of them. I assume there's many Tomb Raider porns. I'm sure there's Uncharted porn. There's definitely Mass Effect porn. Not that I know anything.
Dude, we're totally getting into this. Okay. So, is her name Nikki Benz because Mercedes Benz or because she bends over?
I assume it was because she bends over. I mean, Mercedes-Benz, that'd be like a little, that'd be a bit of a stretch. Like,
well, because she's a car person. She's a car person.
Yeah, I guess
is that, she dressed like Cindy
I think it's,
from
it's
the game?
Both,
so she has like that
things.
Blue or yellow shirt
yeah,
with
yellow
red stripes
shirt.
On it.
Yeah, boobs.
That's attractive.
Mm-hmm. Short shorts sold out.
So.
The guy who plays Sean Lawless, he looks nothing like the other characters, though. He's like bald and fat. And it's
they're
like,
always bald and like really beefy. Yeah. It's really weird. They look like a dick themselves.
That's probably on purpose.
Okay, so. I don't know how to say this without sounding really weird, okay. But I'm interested in this. Like, I want to know, like, what it looks like. Not the porn part. I just want to know how it comes out. So.
They showed some screenshots.
So, I don't watch porn. And this is not me, like, trying to maintain some sort of, like, thingy. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, I'm really weird when I get a girlfriend. I feel like it's cheating, so I don't do it.
Right.
But. I'm always interested in porn stories. I just want to know what stupid reason they have for fucking. So I just want to watch this so I know how they get to the porn stuff. And I was really, like, when you put this on there, I almost texted my girlfriend. I haven't yet. Probably will. Yeah. Am I allowed to watch this? Like,
it's research.
For research reasons? Like, I actually just want to know. Mm-hmm.
For a review.
Like, what's the monster look like? I don't know. I'm interested.
They didn't show the monster in the screenshots, but I expect it's very bad.
Oh, wait, there are screenshots?
Oh, yeah, there are. That's why I said the guy, he looks nothing like Noctis. I guess he's supposed to be Noctis, but he's totally not. But he's like a fat, bald guy. And she, I mean, granted, good cosplay. Like, she's definitely, they nailed the outfit with Nikki Benz here, you know, playing Cindy. But everything else is, it's just, it's like a, they have like a bad green screen behind them to like show like a desert, and they have like a truck, which maybe it might be, I don't know, a Benz or something. Mercedes Benz, I don't know. Do they make trucks? I don't fucking know. But it's, yeah, it's very weird and, kind of off-putting, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I kind of want to watch this, see what this is all about.
I just realized why this is at the end of the thing. And that's because we're going to talk music. Yeah, exactly. I wonder what the music is like in there. What if they got Nobuo Uematsu to make some porn music?
That would be incredible.
My friends, as I'm sure all of you know, is the prelude to Final Fantasy. I really wanted to go with Final Fantasy 2 here because it just like had this the Famicom version. Also, we're talking 2 and
the
3. No, it's not lesser. I went ahead and gave Chris his little treat and put in some PS1 remake because that's how he knows Final Fantasy.
Which is the better version. Yeah.
Okay, so technically they're better, but like, really?
It, well, here's the thing. You love chip music. That's your whole
thing.
That's
my thing.
You love that. Where, with me, I like kind of more modern video game scores. So everything from kind of like the 90s on. And where with Final Fantasy, they kind of made the score, I mean, it's not really chip-based music. It's more kind of like something you see in a film. More kind of cinematic, more operatic.
You mean in the remakes?
In the remakes, yeah. In the remakes for the PS1, so Final Fantasy 1 and 2, which they combined for Origins.
Yeah.
And so that's how I remember the music. That's why it was funny. When we were kind of first listening to it, I'm thinking, I don't know what the fuck this is. What is this?
Oh, yeah, I was playing you back some of the music so that you would be like, is this what you like? And you're just like, wait, this isn't what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what?
I was super confused.
But we did into the lead-on in the first part of the show, this is a multiple of 10, so I get to do a music episode.
Yes, you do.
And with the release of Final Fantasy 15, I thought now was a perfect time to go back in time and look at the earlier entries who have always had great music. All of them.
Yeah.
So for this episode, we're going to hit 1, 2, and 3. Same format as last time. We'll select a couple songs, talk about them afterwards, and do a lead into the other. And when I say 1, 2, and 3, I mean Final Fantasy 1 from 87. 2, the 88 version in the Famicom, not the 4 that we got.
Yeah.
And 3, the 90 version Famicom version, not the 6 that we got.
Oh, that all makes sense.
Yeah, I hope that makes sense.
Put it in the notes. It's the real Final Fantasy 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I can't wait to get to 4, 5, and 6, though.
Like, 4 is great.
The music in those are great. Mm. But also, in these early days, the music was stellar music.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, Final Fantasy 1, 1987, story was very light. It was just about 4 light warriors. Initially, they were out to rescue a princess.
Sounds
which,
brilliant.
Yes, which actually is seen as sort of like a little thumb at your nose at Dragon Quest because its quest was to rescue the princess and return her home. Final Fantasy I just kind of opens with that. You go rescue the princess and you're kind of done with that in the first like 20, 30 minutes of the game. And then the world opens up. And, I'm just going to put my cards out there. I've never beaten a Final Fantasy game.
Yeah.
I've played a little bit of 4, 10, 12, and 13. Ooh. God, 13's not great.
Yeah.
And 1. I'm currently going through my first playthrough of 1, and it's a little obtuse.
Oh, it's very obtuse.
It's just like...
Doesn't hold your hand.
At all. I don't know where anything is.
Mm-hmm.
And, God, thank you, wikis. But, like, yeah. if I didn't have a wiki, if I'm a kid in 87 playing this game, I think 88 in the U.S., but, like, I would have been lost.
That's why it takes so long to complete these Final Fantasy games. That's why you have, like, hundreds of hours, where you're just like, I have to find where everything is, and they don't really give you a good sense of direction, especially, yeah, in the first game especially. It gets a little better in 4, which is what I'm playing right now. It's like, it's in this general area, you can find it. But yeah, with 1, it's, like you said, it's very obtuse, but it introduced like it introduced kind of what at that time, what was so great about, you know, the Japanese role-playing game, where it was that kind of big open world-esque, you know, type thing. And, you know, even though the characters weren't exactly, well, characters, it reintroduced like cool character classes, to Final Fantasy, where you had like your warrior, your rogue, but also your different kind of, mages as well. You have white magic and black magic, and white magic is healing and black magic is like destruction. So,
and it does give you the ability to sort of switch around.
Yeah.
Like to each game doesn't have to be the same. You just can select how you want your 4 lineup to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm rolling with like the standard 1 white, 1 black, fighter, and a rogue.
Yeah,
rogue. Or thief, or whatever.
It's like whatever. Guys do stuff.
But yeah, like I'm enjoying it so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really hard to wrap my head around.
Yeah.
Because it's...
It's not how games are made today.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's... You explore and everything,
mm-hmm.
But every 5 minutes I'm running into something.
Yep.
So I can't imagine the frustration of a 1987 kid who can't just like quick save. Or like memo save. Because I'm... Let me tell you right now, this is the biggest, like, Vita ad right now. This is why I want a Vita, is mm-hmm. to just play, like, PS1 games. Because I'm playing the Origins version, too, so the yep. music does sound like the Origins version, that's but so I'm still... Good. I chose chiptunes.
So good.
but, yeah, like, that's why you need a Vita, is to play the, like, old PS1, PSP game, re-releases and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But for this first section of music for Final Fantasy I, I chose the main theme. Just quick notes, it just kind of gives a joke. It's got a jovial bounce to it. It does a good job of really setting the sense of adventure, which yeah. I think is what the first Final Fantasy should do. I also chose... Well, I didn't choose this one. I went ahead and gave Chris... tossed him a bone. He came back with a list of songs that he liked from the Final Fantasy soundtrack.
For me, my favorite absolutely is the Temple of Chaos, because like in the PS1 version, it is the most... I hate to use this word, but the most epic sound, the most operatic of all, kind of all the songs from the first game. And it's just for me, it perfectly captures what Final Fantasy is that it is this, yeah, jovial adventure, sure, but it's this grand adventure. It's this grand quest. It's kind of like the Japanese version of Lord of the Rings, if you will, but you know, inspired like with European influences, things like that. And it just captures that epicness that I had associated with the Final Fantasy franchise years ago. And just for me, I mean, I absolutely love Temple of Chaos. I think it's the best of, among all the games that we're going to talk about, I think it's probably one of the best pieces of music. Well, maybe Final Fantasy II with Castle of Pandemonium, which
also your PS1 version.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I do love Temple of Chaos from what I recall. We're going to get to dive into it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like, I do want the audience to really get a sense of, you know, the old and the new, to kind of see where it went. And you, main theme does have this sense of adventure, but like you said, Temple of Chaos should have this more grandiose sense. And you kind of just get that with better tech. Another, the one after that is Undersea Shrine. As you'll note, because I think this happens in each section of this episode, I select a track purely because it has sweet upward note flourishes, and Undersea Shrine is definitely that.
Yeah.
I will say the melody does have a better flow. It doesn't seem to be so staccato, which I think will
helps put that whole Undersea vibe that it should be going through. And last, I wanted to end with Dead Music, which is the theme that plays when you die. Yeah. Which I didn't hear very much, you know, because I'm good at video games. But it's still a nice piece of music. So hopefully you don't hear it too many times other than this.
Well, the thing about it is that it's not typically what we associate with death in a video game. It's kind of happy, you know? I mean, it sounds nice. It's like, I died. I'm not too upset about this. Whereas, like, I mean, when I think of, like, a death screen, I think of, like, something like Resident Evil. Like, you die, it's like, oh, grrr, you know, just like, it's everything's awful. Where here, it's like, death's not too bad. I could just go back.
Maybe I'm in purgatory. It's not too bad. Not good either. Mm-mm, no. It's just fine.
But, yeah, I think it stands out among kind of all death music in video games. Yeah. So
once again, that's main theme, Temple of Chaos, Undersea Shrine, and Dead Music. See you in a bit. Kind of forgot to mention who makes this wonderful music for the first three, and I think the whole franchise, correct?
He does the majority of the music.
Nobu Uematsu?
Good job.
I think God, that was
You're
bad.
Close.
I know it's Uematsu. I just, the first Uematsu. Name. So yeah, he's been one of the biggest staples, and I'm sure if you don't really know music in the video game industry, you've probably at least heard Uematsu's name. I think he's the most well-known composer.
Certainly heard his music.
Yeah. But yeah, so the first song, main theme, like I said, I think it just kind of has a jovial balance. It really sets this sense of adventure. Yeah. It's very lighthearted, too.
I mean, the thing that reminds me of is Legend of Zelda, where it's this kind of this introduction to this new world. It's kind of, yeah, it's light in tone. It's supposed to be fun, and you're going to go on this grand quest. I mean, that's what I think of, like, the main theme for the first Final Fantasy. So.
And you kind of had brought this up, too, off mic. Legend of Zelda came out in 86.
Yeah.
So it came out before Final Fantasy. And you kind of have to wonder, did they kind of get some inspiration from it, you think?
Everyone stole from each other back in the day. I mean, everyone doesn't now. We take what works and we incorporate it to make it, like, this is our version of that thing that happened. Yeah. And I think that's fine. And it kind of makes sense where, especially in Japan, you know, where Squaresoft was obviously borrowing from Nintendo, and Nintendo was obviously borrowing from Squaresoft. And the music, in this case, it was the music. And whereas, like, as I think most people, well, probably a lot of people don't know, is that a lot of times the music for games is done after the game is already completed. So it kind of inspires the person who's composing it. And in this case, it clearly Uematsu had listened to Legend of Zelda. I'm not, you know, trying to say that he did, but I wouldn't be surprised had he heard that. It's like, now I'm going to create my own version of it.
So. Yeah, and the sense and the essence behind both games is simply adventure.
Yeah.
Shigeru Miyamoto has talked about how Legend of Zelda came from him just kind of like playing and exploring in his backyard and things like that. So, like, I could see Uematsu playing the game and being like, okay, like, I understand what he was going for. Let me try this own little spin on it. But the next song is more you.
Yeah.
Temple of Chaos, it was the PS1 version, as I'm sure you could tell by the quality of the music.
It's so good. For me, I mean, this is what I associate the first Final Fantasy game with, is this song, where it's a little more grander in scale than the kind of the main theme, where I wouldn't say it's darker, but it has that kind of epicness to it that I really appreciate, where I was just thinking, like, I'm riding my horse across this field with all my compatriots. And then it kind of, the music then goes darker for a brief period, where it's like, now we're all by a fire. We're talking, we got to be very serious about everything. And that's how I associate, where it kind of, it's almost like the entire game, where it starts out like kind of happy and go lucky, but then it gets a little more serious when after you rescue the princess and all that nonsense, and you have to deal with the evil darkness.
Kind of
coming, so
kind of how you have to deal with the real world when you grow up.
Yeah, kind of is. So it did. This song is about growing up. Clearly, thank you, John.
But my one complaint. I did love the track. I think it's beautiful, and I love the little piano hits.
Yeah,
they're so beautiful. I can't remember if it's from the PS1 version, because I gave you the option of like three. You had three tracks, and you brought one in with this stupid harp.
The harp is fine. That is Final Fantasy. The harp is brought in.
Don't do it for me.
The harp is very much a part of the original Final Fantasy games, like 1 through 6. All those games have a harp in it. At least the ones that I play again on the PS1. And it's that, because those are kind of like high fantasy. Yep. Whereas the later Final Fantasy games, 7 and 8, 9 kind of went back to the traditional Final Fantasy, but all those others,
it's like a steampunky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All the other ones, the future crap nonsense and all that, and boy bands. Then it went, you know, kind of, yeah, they went away from that, which
it's not pure fantasy.
It's not anymore.
My one real problem with it was it wasn't very chaotic.
It's before the chaos is happening. The group is a temple, and they're all rigid, and they know what they have to face, and then they have to, the temple is going to endure the chaos. That's the temple.
So the temple before the chaos.
That's how I think of it. maybe not the best titled song. I'll agree to that.
It was still good.
Yeah.
Undersea Shrine was the next one.
Yeah, probably the second best in the entire.
Again,
game.
You can note, I'm just a sucker for the.
Yeah, you
the
love
little
that
note flourishes. And again, like I said before, it just, the melody just kind of has this sort of flow. And interestingly enough, I said this while we were listening to the Temple of Chaos. That one also sounded kind of underwatery. It just, there's a certain, when I think underwater themes, I think of a sort of flow. It just ebbs and it kind of pushes along. And I think, especially in this chiptune era, where things are very kind of staccato.
Yeah.
Undersea Shrine kind of ebbs away from that. And it does have a little backing track to it that I really love. It's just a little bouncier. But yeah, what did you think about it?
I thought it was great. Again, I like the PS1 version a little bit more. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It does have that nice flow to it, where I think it, in terms of like the chip music, I think it's at best, I think it's better than Temple of Chaos. Like, the Temple of Chaos chip music is probably not as good as this. So I think of all the songs, it's definitely the best. I mean, I really liked it. Again, I loved it. It had that flow, and it had a nice kind of, like, melody to it. It was much softer, and that's what I really appreciate about it, so.
And Dead Music, which at first I thought Undersea Shrine was my favorite in the set, but I think I really do like Dead Music. It's, you're right, it doesn't really get across the part of death.
That's what I like about it, though.
It kind of, I was sitting there thinking about it, and I was like, it feels more like end credits music. Mm. Like its own sort of finale of, like, well, you're dead, your game is over, end credits. And it's just kind of, I don't know, it is a little happier, and it doesn't feel quite so ending. It feels a little sad, but still.
I mean, off mic, I was just adding my own lyrics to it.
You
mic.
Were. You
were dead. Yay, we're dead. And just, like, you know, not even close to what the song was going on. I'm thinking, this is what I would be saying at the end of every death animation, whatever the hell it was. But I think it really works, because it just stands out compared to all kind of death music that we typically hear today.
Yeah.
You know? It's not negative, it's positive.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I guess it's a sweet release from wandering in the woods for 60 hours.
Yeah. You need those guides, folks. You need to use those guides.
You really? I don't understand 87, like 80 kids, 80s kids. Like, these games are impossible.
That's why they only had one game for like 6 months.
That's true. I guess if, like, you could only afford one game for every 6 months, Final Fantasy is probably going to. Because
it'll last you a long time.
You could just be exploring and stumble across, oh, there's a cave up here. Mm-hmm. Like, I can see that, but when I'm just trying to get through some games, trying to experience a story.
Yeah. That's not what games were like back then.
Yeah.
So.
But moving on to Final Fantasy II. This one, the 88 Famicom version, again, it wasn't initially released outside of Japan. The two we got was actually 4.
Which is great.
Which is a great game. Here we do see the introduction of Chocobos. Don't worry, I did not choose the silly theme.
I wanted you to put that in there, but it's a great song. It's, again, it's goofy fun. All right, be curmudgeonly all you want.
It's just, it's like,
it's part of the franchise. It's an important, even I'm not the biggest fan of Chocobos, but it's an important part of the franchise.
Just sing it. Sing it to me.
I can't sing it. maybe they'll hear it. You can hear it right now.
There you go. Yes. Thank you. You like did that, made me do it.
More work for you.
But that Sid, who has still making an appearance in some form in 15.
Ultra forms,
you know, little chestier.
Mm.
But he made his first appearance in the second game as well. And it actually didn't see a release in the US until 2003 in the previously I mentioned Final Fantasy Origins. I haven't personally played this game, but you did, correct?
The game is weird. Where it kind of has a type of upgrade mechanic that is similar to Skyrim, of all games, where you don't level up unless you use... You can only level up your skills if you constantly use that same skill, like, over and over and over again. So what you constantly have to do is... Where it basically puts you into this type of thing where if you're only using, like, light magic or healing magic, then you have to pick just a particular type of spell and use it over again to upgrade it. And it's actually frustrated a lot of people back in the day.
Wait, you have to pick a spell to upgrade? Yeah. Or just using healing makes your white magic?
I'm trying to remember exactly, but I think it's individual, like, abilities.
Okay, that's bullshit.
Yeah, so I think that's why people were so upset about that. And even at the time, where it's like, I think of the game fondly. It was frustrating. It was still SquareSoft at the time trying to figure how do we want this series to evolve? What works? And this was a case where it didn't, and they abandoned it. So
yeah, and it did. It was kind of a quick turnaround time. Like it was just 1 year. And also, I don't believe they expected to make a sequel. Really, like Final Fantasy One was sort of the joke is like it's called Final Fantasy because Square thought they were going to go bankrupt. Their Final Fantasy.
But it proved to be a commercial and critical success at the time.
But the selections I chose, the first one, again, I wanted to choose its main theme, mainly because I wanted it to juxtapose with the first one's main theme. I think this one's main theme is much darker, in which to me, comes across a little more focused. This, the story of two, it actually gives character names to your characters.
Yeah, in the previous game, you
just, you were just like warrior, thief, blah, blah, blah. So it seems, did you say Butthole?
Yeah, so no, that's my warrior's name, Butthole. Butthole.
Yeah. God. It's like, are you someone who like,
names, I was very young.
Do you just like name Link Ass or something?
Maybe.
Hey, Ass, go get that chicken.
It's so funny. Oh my god. I'm really laughing by the way.
I know you are. I know, it's really sad.
Oh man.
But perhaps my personal favorite in this entire episode is Magician's Tower.
Right.
I'm not really going to explain what it's like. Maybe because in the notes I didn't put what it was like. I just put a star.
You have a nice asterisk, right?
I just put an asterisk because, like, this one.
Yeah. But, I mean, the next one after that is, not skip that one, but yeah, we'll get into it shortly, is Castle Pandemonium, which is my favorite of the songs of Final Fantasy II, because it is kind of pandemonium. It's all over the place. It's chaotic. Mm-hmm. This is the temple of chaos.
This is the temple of chaos. This is what it should have been.
And again, because I remember the PS1 version, this is probably the most bombastic of any of the songs in the original game. That's why I personally appreciate it. Again, I associate Final Fantasy being big. So.
Okay, yeah. This one, I haven't actually listened to the PS1 so version, good. So this will be more my first reactions. Yeah. And lastly, for this set is Finale. My initial notes off of just hearing it was, there's just kind of a majesty to this one.
Yeah.
I think it's a treat to behold, especially when you consider it in 87 around these early games. Like, there are great games like Mario, and that theme is like, very nice. It's very fun. But it's so simple. And I think the Finale, for what it kind of presents, is starting to show that there may be some complexities hidden in these chips if you give it the time to really, like, figure them out.
Yeah.
And it's still pretty bare bones. I mean, you know, so the entire soundtrack kind of is bare bones for what we expect later on.
Mm-hmm.
But you can kind of see hints of it, and it's starting to really get the vibe. And it just shows a nice progression from just 1 year later from 1 to 2.
Yeah.
So once again, that's main theme, Magician's Tower, Castle Pandemonium, this dumb PS1 version, and
mean
and Finale. We'll see you in a bit. Thank you. about that whole thing was when we were listening, I played Castle Pandemonium, the NES version, and you were like, yeah, this is what I'm talking about.
I thought that it was going to like start playing like, oh, now it's going to, but then, it's, then the orchestra's going to kick in. I'm thinking, oh, I guess this is what it, I don't know. It's late. I'm tired. I'm sleeping. We listened to a lot of chip music. You know, I got a little confused, but that orchestra. Well, and that fucking choir, but we'll get into that in a second.
First off, first one, main theme.
Yeah.
I want to hear your thoughts. You seem to really like this one when I initially started.
I liked it because it's, I mean, it started getting closer to what I associate with Final Fantasy, which again, it's that kind of grand epic adventure, but it's, like you said, it's darker. It's, it felt like a little more mature, where this isn't about, you know, like saving a fucking princess this time. Like, you know, this, they're, things are getting serious. And, the thing is that, I mean, kind of, as you said at the beginning, where, it felt like there was a greater sense of what they wanted, what Squaresoft wanted Final Fantasy to be, where there we have these protagonists who, as you said, are have their individual names, and it's more. I felt like it's probably going to be like more of a personal story, and we're here. I think the music should be kind of more personal, not should be kind of like this, you know, typical, you know, bubbly fun adventure, but like no, it's things are going to get a little more serious, a little more personal. So that's why I like this main thing better. So.
Yeah, and I think throughout this whole set list. You kind of see that.
Yeah.
Everything is much darker, which it's kind of fitting together more. And it does, you know, parlay that whole thing with, you know, maybe now they know where they're going with mm-hmm. it. And they know what they want to be. It's a much more focused experience. And I do like this main theme a lot better than the other one.
Yeah,
just because it just has more mood to it. But moving on to Magician's Tower. Which I just like love the Starfall type vibe to mm-hmm. it. It's on the edge of spacey and it's so, I don't know, it has almost a chaos to it.
Yeah.
It's just like right on the edge, just about how fast it's kind of going. Mm-hmm. But your thoughts on it?
No, I completely agree where it does kind of feel like you say like Starfall, but I kind of associate with, yeah, something's like, something's coming down from the sky or something like that. Like it has this. I don't like a rainstorm or something like that, but the rain's like moving in every different kind of direction. That's what I think of it when I hear this music. But yeah, and it has those kind of those little things that you like
little
so much.
Flourishes.
Yeah, little flourishes, which I think serve the song very well. So,
yeah,
I really liked it. Yeah.
But yes, now you can talk about
Castle Pandemonium on the superior PS1 version. Even though I got confused, I'm thinking. This sounds like it. The thing is that it's throwing me off because it sounds like that music, but then it's like, I thought it's like in the beginning, but then it'll get operatic. But anyway, yes, this, like much like its name suggests, this is kind of, this is very much chaos. This is the temple of chaos of this particular song where it's kind of, it's meant to be extremely epic, very operatic. You have like the, not only a full orchestra playing, but you also have a choir in the background, give that just that greatest sense of just drama. I mean, just for me, it's, again, this is what I associate Final Fantasy with. It's just big stuff that's happening and I have to battle.
Again, it is kind of hard for me to compare it directly
to
the NES version because it's the tech. It's so big.
Yeah.
But the choirs, it's the nice little back stuff that they put in it. I turned up the volume, got my head really close.
Yeah, I knew you were listening to choir.
And I was like, there's choirs in there. Mm-hmm. That's some good shit right there. It's a good song choice. Yeah. And you're right. It is a more, there's just a lot kind of going on in it. And it has this chaotic feel. And I think, again, it goes towards what I was saying about, like, Magician's Tower had a nice ounce of chaos and dark, and the main theme, so much darker. It just had that
this
chaotic
darker as well.
Mood. And even, and just the way it's all working, even as the tech is improving. And I love that in the PS1 remake, they didn't really lose that vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great thing because we talk about remakes. We've talked about them before in an episode about how you can still fuck it up.
Yeah.
Even though it's a game you've made already, there mm-hmm. are ways to fuck it up. And I think the music could be a simple way, especially a generation leap from the NES to the PS1.
Yeah.
Two generations.
Yeah, Famicom.
Yeah. So, but the last one, of course, was Finale.
Yeah.
And again, this one, it started off different. It was, I actually didn't remember it started off like this. It was much quieter and
slower.
It pauses for a second, mm-hmm. and then the majestic sound really comes in, and it felt, even though it is from 88, it felt like it wanted to be an orchestra, and it, like, if only, it was sort of calling out, if only the tech was here, I'm trying, bud, I'm trying to show you what I can do, and it's, I don't know. I just really appreciate that. I can feel the effort in this song in particular. It had nice backbeats and little like random flourishes here and there. And it's just, I don't know. It was the one that it sounded a little different from the other three, but rightfully so.
Yeah.
Your adventure is complete. You've conquered the darkness and that's, you have your rightful place as like the king of this game. And it's, I don't know. I just really loved it.
No, I completely agree with you. Yeah. That it's, whereas the three songs were very, very dark, this one is kind of, this is the end of your journey. It's soft. It's quiet. And it's what it needs to be. It's a fitting end. So, yeah.
And something, you know, an extra song that we listened to, Templation of the Princess. Maybe I'll put a little taste here. But the main point of that is before we kicked off to the set, you had talked about maybe these artists are just grabbing from each other. You're not stealing. And I meant to tell you that there's a lot of instances, if you look back in these older games, where the composers have listened to a lot of certain artists or certain types of music. And just naturally, and I don't want to cast any shame here because I doubt they really thought about it. But you end up copying stuff.
Yeah, inadvertently. It's like, oh, shit. And then you realize it later on. It's like,
Yes. So, like, this instance, neither of us can name it. So if you can, please feel free. JJ Rum on Twitter, Chris J. Herman on Twitter, like, or in the comments. Let us know because it's killing me. Mm-hmm. I know this is some sort of, like, classical opera song.
We've all heard it before.
Yeah. So please tell me if you know. Another funny entrance of that was had nothing to do with this. If we ever get to a Parappa the Rappa episode, one of the
that'll be all you. I'll just sit here silently. I won't even be here. I'll just be like, yeah.
One of those songs is taken directly from some like German industrial rock group.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, it's just a lot of, especially back in this day in the '80s. Yeah. It's the Wild West.
Well, people were taking
people were just taking left and right. Like a president just grabbing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, let's move on to Final Fantasy III. And I'll be honest, I know the least amount about this one.
Same. I can't remember playing it.
Again, this is the actual three, Famicom 1990, yeah.
That's five.
Not six.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Was five not released?
We got one, four, and six.
Oh, okay.
PS1. I don't think we didn't get five until PS1.
Yeah, see, same. I'm the wrong person to ask. I'm not original FF. I'm the new better version.
That's why I remember we've had argument where you were like PS1 was better. It had Final Fantasy 4 and 6, and I was like, no,
that 4, 5, 6.
That's the Super Nintendo. What are you talking about? But anyway, Final Fantasy 3 is interesting to me because the only way to play this game was on the Japanese Famicom.
Yeah.
Up until 2006, when it finally got a DS remake, a regular DS remake. I've never really touched it. I don't know too much about the game.
I want to say, does this game have where everyone looks like a chibi? If I want to say it might be this one.
Yeah, the 2006 version.
Yeah, so it is that. Okay.
Yeah, I think they also did that with 4 as well.
They did.
Like a weird animation style. Well, not weird, but yeah, more in line with like Crystal Chronicles.
Yeah, I think that's on the DS version of 4, but not on the PSP version of 4, which I'm fucking happy about because I would have not liked that.
Yeah, I'm all about sprites.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Give me those sprites. Mm-hmm. So for this one's all just based on tracks.
Pretty much.
I don't really know too much about the game. Mm-hmm. So what I selected off Final Fantasy III was Crystal Cave. Notes initially are, it just kind of starts with a sound that is sort of an inverse of the prelude that we know. It just sounds a little different, but what follows is great. It really sprinkles in this mystical, these mystical like flourishes up, which again, you know, I love, and it helps exemplifies crystalline kind of things to me. So I'm very interested to see what you think about that one. The next one is Jin, the Fire. The sole reason I chose this one, and you'll notice it right off the bat. It creeps, and then evasive sharp cracks just happen. Just randomly. It's sort of off tempo.
Right.
Jazz-like in that sense. And then right after that, it just kind of gets very, melodious.
Mm.
And so I just really love that juxtaposition. Like when I talked with Undersea Shrine, I like the flow part.
Yeah.
When most songs are just very like, tee, tee, tee. There was a lot in the Final Fantasy III soundtrack, which it is also worth noting was much larger than the other two games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're going to notice in this set is the complexity is starting to come out. There's a lot more ideas coming here. And this was near the end of that life cycle, because the next games, 4, 5, and 6, were SNES games.
Yes.
To my understanding.
For PS1, my understanding.
Yeah. The next track is Go Above the Clouds, which to me, this is the apex of adventure here. Mm. You're like sailing through the sky. And also,
once, Sky Galleys, right?
Also, once again, you know how much I love Flourishes.
Oh, I know.
Because they're in this. Mm-hmm. This set was hard for me to narrow down. The outro song was actually, what is going to be the outro song of this episode was actually in this spot, and I'll talk about it a bit.
Okay.
Once we get back from the set. And then the last one is Castle of Hain or Han. This one gets very complex. There's a lot going on at different points in the song. Mm-hmm. It's really just one of the more complex tracks, and I think that's really why I selected it, to showcase where this franchise kind of went in a very short span of time. I remember during our initial music episode, with David Wise, really wanted to show his complexity through the years, you know, from the 80s up until Donkey Kong Country Returns. You can kind of see how he graduates to orchestras. I think Uematsu really grew a lot in just 3 short years in one console. So I just really wanted to showcase that here, and I think that's what's something to really listen for in this next set. So once again, that's Crystal Cave, Jin, The Fire, Go Above the Clouds, and Castle of Han. We'll see you in a bit. though this is the game I know the least, I think this is my favorite set list.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a lot of growth. There's a lot going on in each song. Let's just start off with Crystal Caves. I think, I don't know, one, I as we were listening to it, I was like, did I get it mixed up? There aren't any flourishes in the song. And then, like, section four comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. It starts somewhere and goes to four different places. And that wasn't anywhere close to 3 years prior in the first game. It was just, like, one loop. And so things are getting a lot grandiose here. Mm-hmm. A lot more grandiose.
Well, it's just a lot more complex. I think everything in this, all the songs that you selected, everything's more complicated. Yeah, you have, like, sections on top of sections on top of sections, and they kind of, yeah, they add to the complexity of all these songs. And it's the same with Crystal Cave. And of course, yeah, you have your flourishes and all that, and you have your kind of this. Is this one of the main themes of the game, or is this like the main theme, or is it not the, or is it like one of the first themes that are?
It's not the main theme. Okay. The main theme is usually named main theme.
Okay.
But this is one of the earlier tracks, okay, according to the way the track list.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely feels different from everything that we've heard. So at least in terms of the chip based stuff, everything we've heard so far. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
The next one was Gin the Fire, and I told you it just like it's a very strange song because it. It sounds very basic at the beginning.
Sounds environmental.
Yeah, and it's just like, keep.
Yeah.
Keep. And it's just like, those really got me, because they just sounded very different, because I'd already listened to a lot of the soundtrack, and then I get to that song, like, you kind of sound like Final Fantasy I a little bit in the way it was just, like, popping.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, don't worry, and then throws a melody at you, and I just really loved that, again, the track list is doing.
Yeah.
It's just getting more complex. Uematsu really showing off that he understands the Famicom at this point, and he can push it to its limit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, this song goes places that I didn't really expect from the way it opens.
Well, it's very different because it kind of has I think you said this has a more of like a Middle Eastern kind of Arabic type of vibe to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wonder if this song maybe plays like in a desert environment, or like something's on fire or someplace that's very hot. Of course, that might be appropriate because it's called Gin the Fire. I don't know what gin is, but the fire kind of gives it away. Maybe it's like sparks are coming up or something like that. So
that
yeah,
makes sense. Like,
it's,
pop,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, pop. Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was cool. Yeah.
And this one's just a fun ass track.
Mm-hmm.
Go Above the Clouds.
Yeah.
I think I don't know. It's just apex of adventure. It just sounds like running or just flying through the sky.
I imagine it's the sky boats or the sky galleys.
Yeah, like the airships and stuff like that. Yeah, and it just, I don't know, it's just a hell of a lot of fun, and when I hear the song, I can't help but smile.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, just your thoughts on
it? No, it's definitely the lightest of all the songs that in this particular track, but I think this is when the airships were introduced in Final Fantasy, was this one? Because they're definitely in 4. I mean, you start on 4 in an airship as a captain of an airship. So maybe this is where they first introduced it. And yeah, but yeah, it captures that kind of that grandiose kind of sense of adventure, this freedom that you experience while flying. So yeah, I think it really works there.
And then Castle of Han or Hain.
Hain.
This one, it really goes a lot of different places, yeah. I think. And it just layers on layers on layers, and just a lot of changes going on. It's it again, like Crystal Cave, it's here's section one, here's section two, here's section three, here's section four, all the same song. And I'm just going to keep layering things on top of each other. And the like fourth section, it starts getting really chaotic and the backtracks are so different. But I really loved it because, again, like I said, it goes to show how well-versed this composer was getting and how much just his ability to create so much interesting music in the 90s and like with this Famicom. I don't know. It's a testament.
No, definitely. And yeah, it's what I think we eventually would get with 4, which again, as I said, I'm playing right now, even though it's the PS1 version. I've gone back and I've listened to 4's kind of chip-based music, and you can tell that Castle of Hain was definitely one of the things that inspired that entire soundtrack, where you said, yeah, it's very complicated. It has all these different kind of sections layered on top of each other. And yeah, that's why I think out of everything, it's probably, I guess I'd say it is my favorite of everything that we've, in terms of for Final Fantasy III, my favorite of all the songs so far. So it's really good.
I have to say, You just admitted to like listening to chiptune music.
Yeah,
I didn't say I hate it. I just said that it's
I know, but
the regular the good version of the music, which is the PS1.
The whole point of us doing these music episodes is, of course, to entertain all of you guys and to give me an excuse to keep listening to this stuff.
Yeah,
but my ultimate goal is to have you like really be interested in it and to kind of like, okay, I see it's doing that.
To pick up on the same things that you're picking up.
Yeah.
So I just need to, I mean, this is as much an education for me as it is for the people who are listening to this. It's like, yeah, you're able to pick out like the little flourishes and things like that. And when the extra layers come in, like you can just instantly get it where it'd probably take me like multiple times to listen to this stuff to really get a greater sense of it. But,
and this set had flourishes galore. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just I'm a sucker for the but yeah, that was pretty much the episode. It seemed to really kind of go by fast. I don't know why.
Where's it going?
It's going to be a good chunk of music. I'm going to have to go back in there and I'll add the Chocobo's theme and do the little templation of the princess. I think those are interesting things. And again, I really enjoy doing this, like diving into the music. I would love to give me an excuse to go through 4, 5, and 6 sooner than episode 30, but definitely. We'll go through more music on episode 30. Just haven't decided what yet. But yeah, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Nobu and Matsu for making all of this. I can't wait to really dive into all of the series and really dive into all the music and really see the composer progress.
Yeah.
But are there any final things that you have to say?
No, I just think, first of all, I think all of this music is fantastic, even though I prefer kind of the more updated versions. I'm excited just because we're going to obviously start really playing all the Final Fantasy games. We're going to start reviewing them. So I definitely want to talk about the music during our reviews. So, I mean, everyone should definitely stay tuned for those reviews and for episode 30 or whatever whatever episode we finally get to where we talk about 4, 5, and 6's music.
Yeah, and to kick us out of this, we're going with Deep Under the Water. It was a plan to originally be in that Final Fantasy III set list, but again, it just kind of feels like a closing track, like we're going to float off. It just has a floatiness, and I love tracks like this. The way the backing melody to me also, I know this is a weird way to describe them, but they sound bubbly. It sounds like round notes, just like bubbles floating. So just drift off,
yeah.
Deep Under the Water.